In this hour of the show, we'll be talking a bit about newspapers and how over time they have changed in terms of the way that they look, but also in terms of their content. And our guests for the program, we have two. Here in the studio with me, John Narone. He's professor of communications at University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. On the phone, Kevin Barnhurst, who is professor of communications at University of Illinois at Chicago. And together, they're the co-authors of a book exploring this very topic. The title of the book is The Form of News. It's published by the Guilford Press. And if you're interested in communications and newspapers and history of journalism, this is the kind of book I think that will interest you. So you might want to take a look at it. And of course, as we talk here this morning with our guests, questions are welcome. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, John Rohn, welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. And Kevin Barnhurst, hello.
Hi there.
Thanks for being with us. Maybe first, I would just ask you to talk a little bit about your approach to this subject and how it is you decided to go at it the way that you did, because lots and lots of things have been written about newspapers and about their history and their development and so forth. What in the kind of way that you were going at this subject, what were you trying to get at?
Well, what we began initially looking at how the front page looked over the past 100 years, and we began with an interest in newspaper design and seeing how that had changed. And what we discovered is that design was tied into everything about how a newspaper was produced and how it was meant to be used. And we tried to capture this overall dimension, and then we read that back further in time. So what we're really interested in is how the newspaper is set up as a system, if you will, how it invites people in, how it casts people as readers or as citizens, all of these dimensions. And these are things that aren't usually talked about, because usually when you write about newspapers, you write about them from the point of view of a journalist. You know, how does a journalist put together a story? Or from the point of view of a political critic, what's the bias of news? So we're really looking at something rather different, what Kevin calls the news environment.
You want to add anything to that, Kevin?
Well, it's interesting because at the time that we started, there was a lot of discussion about, this was in the 80s when USA Today had come out, and people were very interested in this new, different kind of newspaper, a different form of news. And it seemed like a sudden explosion, a sudden change that everyone was noticing. And our first question was, has there been some big revolution in the forms of newspapers? And what we found is that they have been evolving very consistently over the entire history of the American Republic, and the forms have changed radically. And as they have changed, they have they've created and sustained different kinds of or different understandings of the public. And so the book, even though we started out from the point of view of design and journalism and its history, over the course of our work, we found that we were really talking about civic culture and the ways that we understand and imagine political life in America. Mm.
Just to pick up on one last thing that you said, and maybe that I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but I think it's the case that, as you made reference to USA Today and how at that time it seemed, you know, very revolutionary that it was something new, and we're asking these questions about where things are going to go from there. I think it's the case, though, in some respects that some elements of that design really weren't that new and would, if you understood this history, might indeed remind you of a rather older form of the paper.
Right. Yes, that's an argument that we make, that instead of being postmodern, USA Today is really neo-Victorian. That is, it's similar in many ways to the newspapers of the 1880s. And if there's a revolution around the time that USA Today was introduced, it's not really a postmodern revolution, but it's a late modern revolution. What you're talking, the really significant thing is that USA Today is a prime exemplar of what we call the corporate newspaper. Kevin, do you want to add to that?
Well, even USA Today, although it's given lots of credit for changing the newspaper landscape, it was derivative in a smaller sense as well. All of the design inventions and innovations that caught people's attention in USA Today had been developed at smaller newspapers in places like Allentown, Pennsylvania, over the course of the previous decade. And the major elements of the way the newspaper was put together and what its mission was and how it created an interface with the public and with citizens had emerged in the 30s and 40s, much earlier in the century. And so it's interesting because the USA Today took design elements from as far back as the 19th century, and it used them to accomplish a mission that had developed for newspapers early in the 20th century. And it also adopted some design innovations from the 70s that were created at smaller newspapers. And so in many ways it was derivative, and yet, as often happens in history, something catches everyone's attention, and this happened to be it.
Let me, again, just real quick here, reintroduce our guests. We're speaking with John Narone and Kevin Barnhurst. Kevin is the fellow who's on the phone. He's professor of communications at University of Illinois Chicago, here in studio with us. John Narone, professor of communications at U of I Urbana-Champaign. Together, they've written a book that looks at how, over time, the look and also the content of newspapers have changed. The title of the book is The Form of News, A History, as published by Gelford Press. And questions are welcome, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, what I'd like to do is have you talk a little bit about some of the basic changes, and I know that we'll have to just give it the thumbnail sketch because you do explore this in that's really what the whole book is about. You explore this in great detail. But we could, in a kind of a simple way, talk a little bit about how papers have changed, starting with the newspapers that existed in early America, where here, I guess, there wasn't a lot of what now we would call reporting. Maybe it was more of what we might call reprinting, and that what the sort of the driving force in these papers was, in fact, the guy who printed it. What were these papers like?
Well, these are what we call printers' papers, and we argue that the guiding metaphor for them was the coffee house or the tavern. What they, as you say, they reprinted official government documents, letters from important people, clips from other newspapers. And what they were designed to do, we argue, is to be a virtual coffee house, to give someone the experience that one would have if you were a gentleman, say, in a Boston coffee house in 1740. What you would do, you would have things to browse through. You would pick them up and look at them. You would have people like yourself to talk to. You would gossip with. What the newspapers did was they presented the browsing material in the form that you would look at it. You know, first, the clips from the London newspapers, and then moving gradually closer. You know, the most important stuff, the gold standard stuff, and then moving closer to home. And then they would also print letters from readers and other gentlemen. That's what these newspapers were designed to do then, to give you the experience, to provide a kind of ritual experience of being a gentleman in metropolitan society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Kevin, I understand you're the guy who's maybe your prime interest is sort of the design and the look of newspapers. What did these papers look like?
Well, they were a lot like books. they used the typography of books and the form of books. The format of newspapers grew only gradually over the course of two centuries. By the end of the 19th century, they were quite large. But the printers' newspapers, the early newspapers in the colonial era and the early republic, were fairly small in format, and they were typographically quite, what would you call it, calm, quiet, reserved, And even so, they did a lot of interesting typographical variation, but it was all within the parameters of what we might think of today as book or bookish style design. And that was part of the idea that the form of the news at that time was the kind of thing that gentlemen would consider appropriate for discourse for their social class. And books, of course, were an important venue for that. And newspapers were a place where gentlemen would speak to each other and discuss concerns and issues of the day and hopefully come to some sort of consensus. So the design was connected to the political purposes and functions of the newspaper in society. Hmm.
So we start out with this kind of paper you called the printer's paper, where where virtually one person was really responsible for everything. The printer decided what would go in, set the type, printed the paper. There was almost a one-person operation. From there, you come into the next stage. This is the stage that you call the editor's paper, where here the process of the technical process of making it and the editorial process of deciding what goes in now gets divided, so that we have somebody else who's making these decisions about what it is that's going to go into the paper. How does that change what is in the paper, the content of the paper?
Well, it changes it in a couple of ways, but the most important way is that it gives the paper a very active voice. The editor's papers are the papers of the rise of mass politics in the U.S. In the 1820s, most remarkably. And at that time, every newspaper in the U.S., virtually every newspaper, had an affiliation to a political party. And the editor of the newspaper was very much a partisan activist, usually a member of the party committee for the area he was in, almost always he, sometimes she, and designed the newspaper to be a voice of the party. The partisan editor was the face of a newspaper in the same way that a network anchor is the face of a network news division, but with a very conscious partisan voice. Mm.
And that was something that would always be very clear and upfront, that is, you knew what the orientation of the
Absolutely.
Of the paper and the editor was.
If an editor tried to conceal that, it was called unmanly, which is a very nasty thing to say.
Well, Kevin, maybe again I'll ask you the sort of the same question that I asked before. When we look at this kind of paper, what did the paper look like?
Well, the format during that period grew larger. It was incremental. It didn't jump suddenly to huge size. But it was also quite reserved. The typography did not suddenly change. But things as the pages got larger, if you looked at the overall appearance of the newspaper, it started to resemble, I guess the size was getting closer to magazine or slightly larger than magazine size. In the format, that is, and the typography, of course, was in multiple columns. It was beginning to look more like the newspaper that we think of today. There was not a whole lot of visual innovation, really, at the time. Illustrations entered the newspaper slowly, and during the greatest growth, I believe, during the partisan era, illustrations really did not advance all that much. They started, of course, in advertising, the small sort of what we call monopoly illustrations that are like houses. The same house would appear next to every house for sale. And, of course, that's the origin, the initial origin of what we now find in classified advertising, although, of course, the illustrations have gone from the classifieds.
These newspapers were very austere in appearance, I think, and it had something to do with the political culture. These newspapers are serious newspapers about politics, but it also had something to do with economic constraints. That is, you had only four pages Throughout most of the 19th century up to the 1890s, all but the very most important newspapers were printed on one piece of paper. You print the front and print the back and then fold it, and that gives you a four-page paper. And the printers were unwilling, and the economies were such that it didn't make sense to go to two pieces of paper. What they did was they increased the size of the piece of paper. So eventually you had newspapers printed on pages that, well, if you open them up, they're 5 feet by 3 feet, something like that, blanket sheets. And if you're reading bound volumes of these in the library, you lay them down on the table and you stand up and walk around so you can read it. They're really too big to read. Of course, at the time, you would fold them in various ways, and there's a whole science of reading a newspaper in the days of these big sheets. But then the paper got bigger, but the type kept getting smaller, the number of columns kept getting larger, and there was always pressure in the news matter to condense.
I tell you, we have a caller, and rather than make them wait, we'll bring him right into the conversation and continue talking about the form of news and how newspapers have changed over time with our guests, John Nerone and Kevin Barnhurst. We have a caller in Joliet. Let's get right to them on our line number 4 right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have two questions. The first one relates to, I think, what you're talking about just now. Why did newspapers print in columns? Why not just across the page?
Oh, Kevin, do you want to answer that?
Well, part of that is because of the mechanical necessities of printing. As and part of it initially comes from people's ability to move from line to line in type. When newspapers were more like books, the width of the column was limited by the ways that had become customary, that a reader would get across one line and would have to find his or her way back to the beginning of the next line. And if you get more than two or three alphabets, that is, you know, 40, 50, 60 letters across, you can't find your way back to the beginning of the next line. And book typographers since the beginning of printing had discovered that there were certain limits there, and that limited newspapers initially. But over the course of the 19th century, the process of printing was more and more mechanized. Instead of having a flatbed press that was manually screwed onto paper so that the impression was made, the presses were made so that they would run on cylinders that would print continuously, and the paper, of course, had to be produced on rolls. And when that became the case, then you had a spinning cylinder with type, loose pieces of lead type that had been set. And if you didn't hold them together somehow, they would fly in every direction. And one of the functional and mechanical reasons that newspapers had columns was that the columns were part of the ways that the type was held into position. So there were mechanical reasons for that. Although I think it's much more interesting that what happened in the course of the 19th century was a process of industrialization in the United States, and in that period, America expanded across the continent, the United States of America, I should say, and acquired a sort of imperialistic ideals or tendencies, and these are reflected in the forms of the newspaper. So adding more and more columns and doing bigger and bigger blanket pieces of paper was an expression of the ongoing industrialization and the imperial mission of the United States.
Mm-hmm. The other question is, in a lot of the older papers, I would notice there'd be a summary of the news in bold type on top of the column. And it would often be quite lengthy, sometimes almost as long as the story itself. And then it would every paragraph or so there would be another, I guess you'd call it a bullet today or a heading or something. That doesn't seem to be as prevalent today as it did years ago. So I suppose there's two questions. Why did they do it then, and why did they stop doing it?
Well, that originated with the telegraphic news. Newspapers would get a telegraph report from their wires, usually the New York Associated Press at first, and it would consist of a bunch of discrete items all sort of in a row. And what they would do is they'd put the items, just print them up in a long column, and then headline them in the same order. So they'd have a title for each item. And you'd read through these headlines, and the first one would be Revolution in Mexico, and the second one would be President Has a Cold. And, you know, you'd go down the list like that. And in the story, it would be one story after another like that. Well, that form was maintained when instead of having all the discrete stories, you'd have one long story. It was shortened somewhat, but still you'd have it outlined up top. And again, you would have the things in the story that would divide the subheads. The New York Times still does this, and I think the Wall Street Journal.
Wall Street Journal does, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in our hometown paper here, in Joliet, they still, you mentioned the telegraphic stuff, they still seem to do that. But they call it an index.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see on the left-hand side of the paper, there'll be an item and then a brief description and a page number. It's almost like an index to the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that like a direct descendant of that type of...
I don't think so. I think that the old form went out of existence entirely, and then the new form was invented as a reader-friendly guide to the news. Because these indexes are highly organized. And those old forms were not highly organized. They were, in fact, very random.
Yeah.
The reason why news items would wind up next to each other in those newspapers, this is in the 1870s, 1880s, say, is because they happened to come in through the same pipeline. That's the only reason, not because they dealt with the same kind of topic.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, very good. We're talking here this morning, and we're already at our midpoint. We're talking here with John Narone and Kevin Barnhurst. John Narone is professor of communications at U of I Urbana-Champaign. Kevin Barnhurst, professor of communications, U of I Chicago. And together they've written this book that looks at the way that the form of newspapers have changed over time and why. And their book is The Form of News, a History. It's published by the Guilford Press. Other questions, comments certainly are welcome. If you'd like to call in, talk with the guest, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We're just, last we were talking about, and as I was following along in this idea about how the papers have changed, and again going back to something I think it was Kevin Barnhurst said, they were not abrupt changes between these different forms. It's a kind of a thing that's a continuum. And I think that it was John here, and John Arone said that the editor's paper, the last one that we're talking about, the one where there was a very strong partisan voice, and it was really very much something that was overseen by an individual. That paper was very austere, and I think that if you then we go and look at the next kind of paper, the Victorian age papers, that these papers were anything but austere. They were riotous in what they looked like, I think, and an amazing cramming together of amount of stuff, and a lot of advertising, and almost where you really had to make an effort to pick your way through what was the advertising and what were the stories. Let's talk about the Victorian papers and what they were like.
Well, there were a lot of things that contributed to the change in from the one to the other, and like you say, it's not a sudden change.
Right.
Actually, the Victorian paper sort of folds in the editor's paper. And you keep the editor's paper in the middle, you know. So when eventually papers would go to eight pages, pages four and five were still the editor's paper and sounded very much like it. But what drove that, the outside, the commercial part of the newspaper, was the rising marketplace, and especially advertising. And we see a lot of design innovation in the ads gradually being adopted by the news sections. And Kevin, do you want to?
Well, the advertising was really, you could tell the advertising from other things, and that because the advertising was always the source of new stuff, the creativity, the innovation that was happening typographically and visually in the newspaper always occurred first in advertising. Even the headline, for example, was an invention produced for advertising that was later, the deck headline that you were describing before with lots of little summary sentences, that's something that advertisers developed first, and then it was adopted in the news columns. Mm-hmm. We also found that the changes made their way slowly through the newspaper into the prime news pages as well. So there was this process of innovation that was very interesting and went along with the industrialization of the newspaper. Sometimes when people from nowadays look at the Victorian age newspapers, they look messy and confusing. And in fact, much of the effort in the next phase of newspaper design and modernism that emerged in the 20th century was a reaction against the exuberance of the late 19th century industrialized newspaper. Excuse me.
When we go, let's take this next step, and again, we'll make sure people understand it, that it's not such a hard, we don't have these hard and fast dividing lines between these periods. But when we go from the Victorian paper to the modern paper, and we've talked all along about there being different sort of driving forces from the guy who printed it to the guy who was the editorial, sort of the person that set the tone, which was very partisan, to a kind of paper that maybe was more and more about the potential for the paper to make money. What really now today, as we move into the modern period and today, really drives the paper, not just what it looks like, but what's in there?
Well, there are two things that drive it. One is reporting. You begin to see the reporter's paper replace the editor's paper. Mm-hmm. And that's reporting understood as expert reporting rather than as authorship. In the Victorian newspaper, there are these famous writers who were Victorian journalists, Twain, Howells, Crane, Stephen Crane, people like that. These were authors who were looking for interesting stories, compelling stories, stories that made a point, and they would tell these stories from beginning to end. In the modern era, you have reporters who are looking for stories that are important, and they tell the stories from end to beginning, giving you the point of the story at the beginning and then moving through it. And then as you move through time, the reporter's time frame changes too, and the reporter moves from talking about what happened to talking about what will happen. The gold standard of reporting is now the future tense, if you will. Mm-hmm. But so reporting drives a lot of the content, journalism, let's say. But then the other thing that drives changes is ownership patterns and economic forces. The newspapers become corporate entities like every other kind of corporate entity, and much more concerned with the bottom line than with political goals or with prestige and other things like family, honor, these sorts of things as you move into the age of corporate ownership. So those are two of the driving forces. And then there are aesthetic forces and cultural, broader cultural forces. Yeah.
It's certainly true that not only do we have fewer newspapers, but also fewer owners. So there's been a concentration of ownership. Does that, here, maybe I'll again turn to Kevin Barnhurst. Has that led to more newspapers essentially all looking the same and perhaps also their content being much the same?
Well, our initial study was looking at that, and we were trying to see if front pages had become more alike in the age of corporate ownership. And it is true that standardization, which is something that corporations impose, has an effect on the appearance of newspapers, so they look more alike. At the same time, the corporate newspaper draws on its long history, the long history of the newspaper and its heritage, as a way of justifying things that are essentially bottom line issues. For example, earlier this year, the Chicago Tribune redesigned, and when they presented their new design to the readers in a boxed letter from the editors to the readers, it was all about the public and serving the citizenry and information, and that's what we're trying to do. And only late did the information come out at the bottom of this item that the standard for the width of newspaper paper, the newsprint web, as it's called, had been reduced. And as a result, the Chicago Tribune, like most other papers around the country, has had to redesign in order to take advantage of the economies that result when you use narrower sheets of paper. So there was a kind of bottom-line corporate motive at work here, and yet the way that journalists imagined what they were doing and described what they were doing and explained themselves to their readers drew on ideals of the newspaper from as far back as the colonial era, when newspapers were a conversation among citizens.
It's interesting the way the ideals of the newspaper, they never disappear. They get piled on top of each other, and then they can be used, at opportunities when we have to pull something out of the partisan era, we'll do that, Right. Yeah, it doesn't go away. The culture of the press is all stratified, and yeah.
One of the as I was thinking about them, one of the things that I was thinking about was the fact that now publications do, on the one hand, newspapers are fairly similar, and on the other hand, they do have distinctive features. And I think particularly if we look at papers that people know well, those that have national circulation, if we took the Chicago Tribune, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Christian Science Monitor, we'd get a bunch of papers. And if we could take them and take the name off and then go around and show them to people, my guess would be that a lot of people, particularly if they are newspaper readers, could tell you what paper it was, even though that didn't say New York Times, Chicago Tribune, and Wall Street Journal. And are the differences there? I mean, is it just sort of an aesthetic design difference? Is it just that, well, yeah, they do look different? Or is there something deeper that's and it's not just that they use different typefaces?
Well, it really involves everything about the newspaper. It's the way they write and the stories they tell and the way they present those stories in not only the words but in the typography and in the layout and everything. A newspaper that's familiar to you is like a big old easy chair that you know the contours and you know where you fit in it and you can settle right in and be comfortable. That's part of our argument that mine, since John always makes me take the blame for it, that the newspaper is a sort of environment, that a micro-environment that we enter and spend time in and become familiar with and accustomed to. And that's why it's not just the name, which is essentially a content question. It's not the name that gives it away. It's a hundred different cues in the ways that news is handled, in the ways that we interact with the paper, in the way that the paper speaks to us, what kind of voice it uses.
And we become attached. We just very much become attached to that.
Yes, and in fact, when redesigns occur, they almost always unsettle readers, and some readers will stop subscribing, some noisily. They'll write to the editor and complain and threaten to, stop their subscription. But often readers simply, the new design makes them look again, and they reevaluate and say, "Do I really need this? This is unfamiliar," and they decide not to continue.
Because the voice of the newspaper is something that's very important, and it's such an important part of the pleasure you have in reading the newspaper. If you're a daily newspaper reader, as fewer and fewer of us are, I might say. And this is something we're attentive to when we talk about online newspapers, newspapers on the web, because it seems to us that the experience of reading a newspaper online is not such that you're sitting listening to the familiar voice of your newspaper. It's really something quite different.
We have about 10 minutes left, and I want to introduce again our guest for anyone who might have joined us in the last 5 or 10 minutes. In the studio here with us, John Narone. He's professor of communications at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Joining us by phone, Kevin Barnhurst. He's professor of communications at U of I Chicago, and they are the co-authors of a book that looks at how newspapers have changed over time. The book is The Form of News, A History, and the Guilford Press is the publisher. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Certainly, newspapers face a lot of competition from other news sources, from other print sources that are not dailies, from broadcast sources, and also now from online sources. What do you think that the Internet means or will mean for the daily newspaper that we now know?
Well, one thing it means is that the newspaper's monopoly is going to be threatened. And now, the typical daily newspaper is a monopoly in its local market. It's a monopoly because it's the only outlet for advertising, especially classified advertising. It's the only source for sports information and for financial information in any completeness, you might say. You get the headlines on the radio, but if you're looking for your stock quotation or how your player, you got to read the box scores, right? And there are other little monopolies like that. The Internet takes those monopolies away or threatens those monopolies. And as it does that, it challenges the newspaper. Either you be a player on the Internet, you be the portal to that information on the Internet, or you turn into something else. What else you would turn into is simply dedicated to local reporting, or be more opinionated, perhaps. So as the monopolies shift and erode, it opens up opportunities and it presents challenges. One of the things that you might see happening, that I expect to happen, I guess, is for a number of truly national media, print-type media, to emerge, and for them to have partisan voices. And I think you're already seeing a bit of this in cable news. I would expect it to happen in newspapers more. A return, if you will, to the strong editorial voices of the 19th century. But then there are the implications for the reader, which are entirely of a different order, what the reader's experience is in reading a newspaper online. And that, I think, is a dizzying and a little bit frightening thing, because it takes away the familiar form of news. It really deforms the news. Hmm. When you're presented with a menu or an index one of these extended sitemaps or tables of contents or something like that, you really have to make your own front page. You have to make your own newspaper. And we wonder, what will that do to the common basis of citizenship, which is what the newspaper was supposed to provide? Yeah. Kevin?
I just spent the last month reading newspapers online as a sort of experiment for myself. I spent a week and a half reading the New York Times online in a very systematic way. I spent close to 2 hours every day reading the New York Times, and then I read the Tribune, Chicago Tribune, for a week and a half, and then I read the Portland Oregonian for an hour and a half to 2 hours every day over the course of the past month. And there, a lot of what we discuss in the book was reconfirmed for me. First off, that the web doesn't threaten the newspaper in the sense that it's very uncomfortable and frustrating to try to read news online. Newspapers package all of that stuff up, and they deliver it to your door, or you pick it up at the newsstand. And you can page through the newspaper and skip a lot of stuff, but when you're done, you feel like you've gotten all the way through the day's news. When you go online, there really isn't a lot more there in the typical news site, if these are at all typical, than the ones I was looking at. But what they do have is lots of ways to connect between different things in the newspaper. And they have a lot of repetition. You'll get the same story from the New York Times staff and from the AP wire service and from Reuters, so you'll have it three times, and you'll be able to link into that story from the front page, perhaps, and maybe from the business page, and maybe from the local page, or from several different places, or the AP page, or the Reuters page, because there are all these links connecting everything. The result is that you feel like you're in a maze, and even after spending that sustained period of time with each of these newspapers, I never felt like I really had looked at them all. So I don't think that the form of news on the web is itself inherently a threat to newspapers. But I do think that the economics of these monopolies will have a tremendous effect on newspapers and whether they can exist. What that means is if web papers did take over, we would have a much less satisfying alternative, and if that's our only alternative, then we will have suffered a great loss if we don't have newspapers. Now, whether that'll happen or not, I don't really. That's the future, and
One thing I'm curious about, and I'm particularly interested in what Kevin Barnhurst might have to say. Sort of as I remember it, when I first started looking at newspapers on the web, what you got was something that looked an awful lot like the print version of the paper. They just somehow made an electronic version, and when it came up on your monitor, it almost looked like the actual paper. After a while, somebody decided, well, that's maybe not the best way and to do it, and redesigned the web versions so that they were something rather different. What I'm wondering about is whether now any of the features of the web versions have now come around, and are they influencing at all the way the print versions look?
Well, there has been an increase in what these days we would have to call interactivity. The new design of the Chicago Tribune has points the reader to websites and gives the reader email addresses to writers and editors and invites a kind of interaction with the editorial staff. And it would be too easy to say, well, that's the influence of the web. In fact, those sorts of things emerged earlier, and the web, I think, encouraged that. And of course, you didn't have websites listed until there was a web, of course. But in fact, there was a general move in journalism, as everywhere else in the culture of this country, toward the ideal of interactivity, and the web, I think, is the expression of that. Now, which way the cause flows, did the web cause this? I think the web is an expression of it, and I think what's happening with newspapers in their form is also an expression of that same thing. And I see that as a very good direction, a move to more of the interactivity that existed, although at a much slower pace, in colonial newspapers.
We talked about some of the things that make newspapers special, why people connect with them. And newspapers do, it seems, still have a special sort of status. That is, even though they do compete with these other news sources, the daily newspaper is still different. Is that something that you think is going to survive? That will it survive as a form, and will it always still the newspaper somehow be special and different, and we'll think of it differently than any other news source that we have?
Well, the one thing you can say for sure about history is that things never stop changing. So there was a time when there were no newspapers. There will be such a time again. Who knows when? Mm-hmm. Not anytime soon, though. And when you talk to, when you look at the studies, the typical age of the news consumer for different media, for newspapers now it's around 48 years old is the typical newspaper subscriber. But that's still younger than the typical viewer of network TV news, which that viewer is getting old very rapidly. And so if you look at the future, we used to think the future was television. I think at least that version of television is past its prime, certainly. And the newspaper is still relatively youthful. But there is some justification for alarm because young people do not read newspapers. Mm-hmm. They find newspapers very boring and very uninteresting. And even when you give them away, it's hard to get young people. By young people, I mean college students, to read the newspaper.
Do you have a last thought you'd like to offer, Kevin?
Well, I do think that young people have been abandoning newspapers, and it's sad, but I think that it's an expression of frustration with the kinds of news that exists today. The news that is in many ways paternalistic. It's about journalists explaining the world to people instead of something that people do. News isn't something that people are producing cooperatively. It's something that professionals, experts, deliver to them. And young people are very resistant to that kind of thing. And I think that in the end that will be to the good, because it may help newspapers become more interactive and also tell better stories and connect more to the everyday lives that people lead. And if that happens, I think newspapers can survive.
Well, we'll have to stop. I want to say, Kevin Barnhurst, thanks very much for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And John Arone, thank you.
Thank you.
And if you're interested in their book, it's titled The Form of News, A History, published by the Guilford Press.